Let's look at the first Phoenix race, not the second Phoenix race. The track has not been changed at this point. Spider in the corner crevice where the wall touches the ceiling. And I'm thinking, should I pause to kill it? I guess I'm just going to let it stay there. Anyway, Phoenix, first race, not the second race, not the crazy race, not the new format, the old format. We're going to do the first race because, well, typically we're going back through the first races and the early season races and pretending to build the lineups as if we do not know what happens, just to hone our craft, to work on our strategy, or work on the quote-unquote process, which, sure, there is a routine that we follow, but to believe that there is an inherent or specific system that helps people win is the most ridiculous thing that I have ever heard. And I've had a couple people tell me that, well, I don't want to necessarily talk to you about my process because I don't want it to hurt my winnings. And I look at those guys and I don't say anything because I'm a nice guy and I don't really care. That means I should care, but they don't want to talk about what they think about, which is fine, but I want to look at him and say, look, dude, you entered 150 lineups. Your process and my process, they're completely different. So if you're to show me what you do, it doesn't matter because I'm not entering 150 lineups. So guess what, buddy? Your secret is safe. So when people tell you that, well, I've got this specialized process of entering 150 lineups in a game where there are only 40 drivers, of which 20 of them are pretty much meaningless. So you're telling me that you have a patented plan and theory that you are able to conceptualize the winning lineup by basically covering all of your bases. Okay, cool. Cool story. So again, what we're just doing is going through looking for certain things and finding drivers that we like and we don't like and thinking about it. Now, this is the first Phoenix race, and the problem with the first Phoenix race, we all remember that Kevin Harvick won, and you probably remember, maybe not, but if you're like me and you missed on Kyle Busch, then you remember that Kyle Busch also had a really good race, and I've talked about this in previous podcasts. So what was one of the mistakes, and this is something that we can learn from moving forward, Kyle Busch was very good in the Las Vegas race. Now, is Las Vegas and Phoenix, are they the same? No and yes. Phoenix is a short track. If you ask some people, based on the braking, and you asked some of them, like Dale Earnhardt Jr., just say, no, it's an intermediate track. You asked me, in my infinite iRacing wisdom, I'm going to say it's somewhere in between. Sometimes it feels like a short track with the constant braking and the rhythms and going through what used to be turns 3 and 4 because there's no banking and it's so slow and it's so long. But you get into turns 1 and 2 and it's banked and it's very fast and it feels like an intermediate track. So it really just depends. Being that it just depends, then you could say, well, a successful run at Las Vegas, which Kyle Busch had, should translate over to Las Vegas. The problem then, even if you are willing to say, all right, we got to get some Kyle Busch shares, especially if them starting 12th. The problem with that, or maybe it was 13th. The problem with that going into Phoenix, I think he started 12th at Las Vegas, not at Phoenix, sorry. But the problem going into Phoenix was he was terrible in practice, hated his car in practice, absolutely hated it. And they interviewed him before the race, and he says, well, I don't know what we're doing. We basically just stole Denny Hamlin's setup and threw it on. We don't know what's going to happen. That does not instill confidence in you when Kyle Busch looks at him. And you know, Kyle Busch is one of those drivers who gets in his own head. And when he gets down, everything's going wrong. And he blames everyone around him. Very rarely does he blame himself. It does happen occasionally. But for the most part, it's the pit crew killing him. It's the tires that they got were a bad set. It's always someone else. And when you're always blaming someone else, you very rarely overcome the odds. You very rarely grow. Now, fortunately for Kyle Busch, a lot of times in those races where he sucks and his team sucks, his team bails him out with a really good pit stop after another and eventually gets into clean air and magically his car is good again. So that's one of the issues with Kyle Busch that we run into. But at this race, he gave that information. Now, you could have looked back and said, well, you know, in the Phoenix race before, in the fall of 2017, Denny Hamlin had a really good setup and should have done that. Mistakes were made. Clearly missed on Kyle Busch. But what I'm saying is, We know now that Kyle Busch is going to slot into the optimal lineup. We know that Kevin Harvick is going to slot into the optimal lineup. We remember him famously winning the race and pounding on his rear windshield. The only reason, though, Kevin Harvick wins this race is because Kyle Busch's team stays out. So we talk about pit crews helping Kyle Busch win. In this case, Kyle Busch loses the race because when we have a green flag pit cycle at the very... I can't stop looking at that spider sitting there in between where the wall meets the ceiling. Can't do it. Your days are numbered, Spire. I am coming for you. Just wait. This is going to be a quick podcast, so your days on the earth, not very long. You can blame my amazing memory of Kyle Busch and Kevin Harvick for shortening your life. Oh, man, there's a couple spiders up here. What in the world? I got a big spider. I got a spider web in the corner with a couple. Oh, I got to kill these before the wife gets home, or it will be end of days. Kyle Busch. The only reason he loses the race is because Kevin Harvick pits about two laps sooner, and those two extra laps on fresh tires allows Kevin Harvick just to pass him as Kyle Busch is coming off pit road. Kevin Harvick gets right in front of him, and that is the end of the race. Kyle Busch could have easily won. Pit crew, not necessarily a slow pit stop, but just Adam Stevens leaving him on the track a lap too long is why Kevin Harvick is able to win the race. Kevin Harvick was very good throughout. We all know Kevin Harvick is a monster at Phoenix, although the last couple years, and Rodney Childress has said this, when they switched the tires, their domination, or at least their edge on the field, had not necessarily completely vanished, but the field was much closer to Kevin Harvick. Now, you'll see in that first Phoenix race, Kevin Harvick excels past the field, and then if we fast forward to the next Phoenix race, Kevin Harvick is just absolutely annihilating the field in the second Phoenix race until he blows a tire at the end of the stage. So let's slot in Kyle Busch and Kevin Harvick. And I don't know, we're going to keep this one as a shorter podcast because what the hell? If you already know the top two hogs, then this doesn't make much of a research or a strategy plan, but we've already started, so let's just keep on going. Now, knowing that we had those two hogs, it's probably going to be impossible to play Martin Truex Jr. starting on the pole. And that's a pretty tough sell. That you clearly, if we didn't know Kevin Harvick and we didn't know Kyle Busch was going to be in control, then we would have built lineups with probably all three of them. You would have had, and if I had to go back and look through my lineups, I'm assuming I probably had a lot of Kevin Harvick, and you would have, because you got Kevin Harvick's history, you've got Kevin Harvick's fast in practice, and you've got that Kevin Harvick's just destroying the field every single week. You're going to have some Kyle Busch, hopefully. Maybe you were scared away by his pre-race interview. That's a whole other discussion for another day. Whether these pre-race interviews are good or bad, we probably need to start tracking. Driver said this. This was the result. Driver said this. This was the result. So we can create some sort of correlation on whether the drivers are honest or what we're really getting from people. Because right now it's kind of a gut reaction, intuition, instincts, and I don't mind that. I believe that's typically your best route is to go with your gut, but your gut can be wrong. Conventional wisdom can be flawed, as Malcolm Gladwell, that's interesting. Gladwell talks about conventional wisdom being a problem in underdogs, and then talks about, though, going with your gut in blink is often the best thing to do. So kind of some conflicting paradigms to live by. Kyle Larson starting second was very fast in practice. And if I look at the history, I'm pretty sure Kyle Larson was good in the fall race, the spring race the season before. I got to look because it was very disappointing when, yeah, he had 11.5 fast laps in the fall race of 2017. In the 2017 spring race, 12 fast lap points too. So he was pretty good the year before. You've got Kyle Larson, who was very fast in practice, starting on the front row. And he was very confident in his car. Again, these pre-race interviews, sometimes you can get a little bit of an edge, and sometimes they can lead you down the wrong path, Bandersnatch style, and you got to restart over. Unfortunately, you can't really restart over. It's just better luck next week. And Larson does that to us occasionally. He gets out in that race and just doesn't have it. He leads at the very beginning, and he piles up some fast lap points early on. But you can tell that he's fading. And then eventually at some point in the race, he actually spins out and wrecks. Chase Elliott starting third. You couldn't afford him either based on what we know. It would be tough to pick Chase Elliott, considering you would say, well, here's the deal. And this was the first week that we could probably do this. The new Hendrick body isn't going to affect them as much as it did at Las Vegas, as much as it did at Atlanta. But, as we said before, Phoenix still has a little bit of aero dependence. It does. Is it a short track? Yes. But it's not a short track like Martinsville. It's not a short track like Bristol. It has a rhythm, but not as much rhythm as those shorter tracks. There's enough speed, especially in turns 1 and 2, which is, I guess, now turns 3 and 4. That's going to be annoying to get used to doing that, because I'm always going to call it turns 1 and 2, because iRacing is not going to change that track. So deal with me always having to make that clarification. But there's enough of an aero dependence at this track. You look at when Kevin Harvick in the fall race of 2018 was, again, annihilating the field. He has a tire go down, messes up. Sure, it messed up probably the mechanical balance, but it also messed up the aerodynamics to the point where his car was, at that point, never going to be better than a third or fourth place car at best. So then you take Chase Elliott last spring, with the new Hendrick car, the new Camaro ZL1 body, you knew there was going to be issues. It wasn't going to be until after Fontana that they were actually able, maybe after Fontana and after Texas, I think after Fontana, that they were able to go back to R&D in Mooresville and implement some of the changes. They haven't done that yet. Yes, Chase Elliott was strong in the fall 2017 race, but look, we've got Truex on the front row. We got Larson on the front row. We know Harvick is someone to compete with. We know Busch is someone to compete with, obviously. Elliott's going to be probably fifth on that list when you factor in the issues with the Hendrick cars. Was he fast in practice on a 10-lap average? Sure, but it's a 10-lap average. Second on the 10-lap average. Not the greatest measure to use at short tracks like Phoenix. I want to see a bigger run. That's where, if you go to DFSNotes.com during the season or FantasyNASCarPodcast.blogspot.com during the season, you can get the spreadsheet data, you can get the history, but you can also get that lap-by-lap data, which is crucial at Phoenix, which is crucial at Martinsville, which is crucial really at the intermediate tracks as well. So when I see someone who's fast on the 10-lap average, that's great. You can run 10 laps, but the real action is going to happen 10 to 20 laps, 20 to 30 laps. That's where a guy like Kevin Harvick or a Kyle Busch separates from the field or runs cars down. Everyone's pretty good. You're not going to beat somebody on the first 10 laps of a run. Sure, that helps if we end up in a short shootout at the end, which is great for race winners, but it's not necessarily great for the Hogs, the guys that we want to lead 40, 50, 60, 100 laps. So I wouldn't be so crazy about that. Now you do got Alex Bowman starting fourth, which tells me great. Hendrick set up a decent short track setup. But I wouldn't take Alex Bowman at fourth, no way. And we know that the 88 car in the past have been really good at Phoenix. And Alex Bowman himself in that 88 car nearly won this race if it wasn't for a late race restart in the fall of 2016, I believe it was. Joey Logano, fast in Q trim, qualifies fifth, very slow in practice three. That would be a concern for me, and I don't like the price. Plus, we know who's going to win. Denny Hamlin starting sixth. Again, these are the guys that you expect starting up front, are the guys that are starting up front. He's showing enough speed, but I would slide him below Truex and Larson. Kyle Busch starting seventh. Does not blow you away with speed. And he's not terrible in practice, but to Kyle Busch's standards, yes, he's terrible in practice. Third on the short run, fifth and long run in practice two, eighth and eighth on practice three, short and long. That's terrible to Kyle Busch's standards. And if he says the car is not running the way he wants it to run, then it's not going to run well in the race. He knows what he needs. He knows what he wants. He's a veteran race car driver. He knows exactly what he's looking for. And so when he says it doesn't have it, it doesn't have it. Changes need to be made, and they were made. But if you're just looking at the raw numbers here, that would worry you. If you're looking at what he's done at Phoenix, you'd feel a little bit better. I mean, he's better historically than, if we're looking historically, he's going to be better than almost everybody, other than the guy named Kevin Harvick. Larson's good, but not in Kyle Busch's territory. Truex is not in Bush's territory, and Bush isn't even in Harvick's territory. And you got to factor that in at these unique short track slash intermediate tracks. If this is just a run-of-the-mill intermediate track, then maybe you don't necessarily worry about track history as much. But you go to a place like Phoenix that is very unique. It has two different corners. It's a strange track. The driver and the crew chief need to be on the same page all throughout practice and through the race, and that's where track history absolutely is important, because they know what to do. They've been through it before. They know exactly what they're looking for, and they know something that other teams don't know. Whereas at an intermediate track, everybody pretty much knows what you need at an intermediate track. I need to be able to turn the car into entry. I need it to stick, and I need to come out and not be incredibly loose. I want to come in full throttle, I want it to stick, and I do not want to get it. I mean, they basically all know the setup. Now, they can't all get it, but there's not a huge difference. There really isn't. The short tracks, there definitely is a huge difference in relying on past setups. McMurray starting eighth is usually pretty much a no for me, although if we were to come back through on our second run and say, oh, well, that's that stinky play that sometimes we have to make. Sure, if we have to make it. Let's look and see how the rest of the field shapes up. Eric Jones starting ninth at 8,300. Again, that's not too much better than the Jamie McMurray type play. It just isn't. We know that we want Kyle Busch because we can't forget the result. We know that we want Kevin Harvick. So that means we're probably going to end up with either a punt, which I don't mind a punt, at a place like Phoenix where you could get wrecks, where people just don't finish the race. It has enough short track in it. And I just generally like punting anyway, especially if I'm trying to get 2 to 3 hogs. And then we may even have to put Truex. I don't know. I can't remember if Truex. It's good if I don't remember. You may even have to go after a Harvick Busch Truex thing, because Truex isn't priced too high at 10.9. Harvick 11.4, Busch 10.5. That's probably too much. But what we're looking at now, if we've got $7,000 left for four drivers each, and so that means probably two round low eights and then two in the sixes is what I'm thinking. Kevin Harvick starting 10th, gonna plug him in. Kevin Harvick wasn't fast in Q trim, so he starts 10th. You roll over the next day, practice 2, first on the short run, 4th on the 10-lap average. Practice 3, first on the short run, 1st on the 10-lap average. You were an absolute lunatic if you were not playing him. Now, there was a little bit of a crazy, like a Fox play you could have done. I mean, clearly, Harvick is a god at Phoenix, and Harvick had been on a roll at Atlanta, Las Vegas, and now Phoenix. You wanted all the Harvick you could get, but, the people were playing it pretty smart, and you got to give credit to these guys. I'll give them some credit. I'm not going to give them completely credit. When you're in 150 lineups and you're fading some Harvick, yeah, of course, you're not going to build 150 Kevin Harvick lineups. I don't even know if you can build 150 Kevin Harvick lineups. Either way, you knew that at some point the other shoe was going to drop and Harvick was going to have a bad race. Didn't happen this week. If you were betting against Harvick at Atlanta, you lost. If you did it at Las Vegas, you lost. If you did it at Phoenix, you lost. So it's kind of like that old hockey edge gambling. I don't know if you've ever seen this, but when a team goes on the road, they're almost always the underdog, and so you bet them. If they lose, that's fine. You double down the second night, and they're going to be an underdog again. You double your bet, and you're going to make your money. And if they lose again on the third night of the road trip, again, they're going to be an underdog, and statistically, they're due to win, and you'll make up your money there. Now, that doesn't work. That's if you're spending too much time on gambling message boards and you've got one of the most basic NHL gambling philosophies. But that is kind of like the Kevin Harvick fade that actually worked out. If you bet against him, finally, if you build enough anti-Harvick lineups at Fontana, then it worked out. But not because you were smart enough to fade anti-Harvick. You were bailed out because a lot of good drivers were starting in the back at Fontana. So everything worked out for you. It's almost like the universe felt sorry for you. Okay, we're sorry. You keep losing a lot. We're going to give you one. Have it. Have it. But anyway, in this one, Harvick comes through. William Byron starting 11th. That would be a no way for me at that point in the season. Ryan Blaney starting 12th. Ryan Blaney was good at the short tracks in 2017. But he never finished well. And so this is the first short track slash intermediate track of the season. I wouldn't trust Ryan Blaney starting 12th, 8,900.
that would be a no case for me. Was not fast in the second practice. Kind of a new team for him as well, moving up to Penske. A lot of red flags for me, at least on my first run through the lineup order. And he's on the expensive end. Really going to hurt you if you are also got Kyle Busch and Kevin Harvick in your line. How do you remember all these specific stats? Well, when you have to write 40 ranking articles every year and all these articles, it just gets jumbled into your brain and it's all very repetitive. And you remember it too because it's kind of the same thing over and over and over and over. How many times did I write Ryan Blaney good at the short tracks last year on average, but he didn't finish? I did that several times. You kind of just spit out the same thing, not because, oh, you're being lazy, but because this is the helpful advice. If I want to tell you about Ryan Blaney's race at Phoenix, and I don't think I'll reuse that again this year, but if I'm really trying to help people out with the ranking, I say, hey, look, Ryan Blaney was good in 2017 on average running position. He just didn't have the finishes. And this is good to look at because most of your average fantasy NASCAR players are just going to look at the average finish. They're not going to look at average running position. So they're going to immediately stay away from Ryan Blaney. A little bit of edge here. I feel like that's a very useful piece of information, and so that's going to work its way into several fantasy NASCAR articles when we get to short tracks. Plus, I'm writing up 20 drivers, and you got to find different stories and narratives, and they're not really narratives, but I can't just say finished number stat, stat, stat. Jimmy Johnson, stat, stat, stat. Chase Elliott, stat, stat, stat. No one wants to read that because you can read the stats on your own. Unfortunately, a lot of fantasy NASCAR articles are stat, 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 but there's a fine line. I don't want to tell people how to write fantasy NASCAR articles because I am to a point where, but I don't know. I may be writing these things for longer than almost anyone I can remember. Writing these daily fantasy articles, going back to daily fantasy radio. And to me, there is a balance between you're just giving me stats and you're just giving me narratives. And I remember reading a guy at Roto Grinders a couple years ago. There were a couple of these. I don't know if they still do them or not since they've paywalled everything. This would have been like they've already put, I think Roto Grinders has gone through about 7 different paywalls or whatever all these websites have, or marketplaces. I think it was after the first paywall, but before like the second or third one. And anyway, they had these random blog type articles, but they weren't blogs. These were articles that were sanctioned, I guess, by Roto Grinders. They weren't just the straight dudes writing blogs. But there were a couple that were just completely narratives and guys talking about going to get tacos the night before. And like, hey, man, I know it's cool and you want to be a writer. And there is a grind to writing these stupid stat articles. And sometimes you just want to be creative and you want to express yourself. And you got a journalism degree and you didn't get a journalism degree to write just stats that you're reading off of a box score. I get that. But I also don't want to hear these crazy stories where every one of them begins with like the same catchphrase, like in which where we something or other. And there's like a duck always involved. And then there's another guy who's kind of funny and creative and I enjoy it. But then it's like, hey, you're not giving me any stats. And then it's a fine line. It really is. And being a guy who's had to go on these shows and try to spit stats at people, you know, it sounds like you don't know if you've done it right. Sometimes you feel like you're too jokey and you're too comical and you're having too much fun with it. And then believe me, they've let me know when, like, we need more stats next time, right? Enough with the silly jokes. And then you go too stat heavy and then it's, whoa, okay, the people can read the box score on their own. It's tough. It's a fine line. And I don't think very many people get it right. And I don't think very many people get it right every single time. It's a hit or miss thing with articles. And I probably should get back to talking about Phoenix. Ryan Newman starting 13th. Again, always 13th driver is always a bit of an alert because typically the guy starting 13th, sometimes this guy could be, I shouldn't say typically, I should say sometimes, this driver could have been a fifth place car. They just missed out on advancing into the final round. Ryan Newman, I'm not really sure about that, although people will be quick to point out, Ryan Newman won the Phoenix race in spring 2017. Ryan Newman stayed out on old tires and then blocked Kyle Larson, who probably should have won, and just basically dared him to wreck him, and Kyle Larson's not that guy, so Ryan Newman got to win. We've kind of turned the corner here as Fantasy NASCAR Podcast over the last couple years. We've grown to appreciate Ryan Newman like a fine wine. His shenanigans are like flavor notes in a Merlot that we just have grown to appreciate and notice the textures and the aromas and the feel on our palate. That's kind of the approach to Ryan Newman. You've got to deal with, sometimes it's oddly surprisingly good. And then sometimes you just spit it and you got wine spitting out your nose and you're thinking, why am I drinking wine? I don't just get a beer. Who do I think I am? But that's kind of Ryan Newman. Paul Menard starting 14th. Again, if you have been paying attention to the Fantasy NASCAR podcast, if we've gone over these kind of preparing to build lineups, Paul Menard is almost always starting 14th, and that is not a place that I want to roster Paul Menard. Daniel Suarez starting 15th. That is not a place I want to roster Daniel Suarez, especially if his practice times are in the mid-20s. And I know you're probably saying, wait a second, though. Those are those smelly plays that we sometimes think about. Sure, we're not going to completely forget it. But they're there, and my first run through, it's a no to Menard, it's a no to Suarez, but it's not a definite no. I'm not going to completely throw those guys out. You don't want to throw guys completely out your first run through, because if you do, you're going to find more information eventually as you dig through research. And if you've thrown the guy out, then you're not digging through those extra levels of research. And I understand there's also the theory of, hey, too much information is a problem too. You need to break things down into smaller segments. There's a lot of noise. And if you can eliminate people from the pool, you're going to have probably better results in the long run. That's true. And I do want to pull some people out, but I can't completely take Menard out. He's pretty close to the edge, but I will not remove him. Suarez, pretty close to the edge, but I will not remove him just yet. Probably second run through, I could say, get out of here. Jimmy Johnson starting 17th. An eventful start to the 2018 season. Wrecks at Atlanta. Las Vegas. I believe he's chalky again and didn't come through. Maybe he did come through. I can't remember. It's an okay. It's a maybe. At $9,000, still a little pricey. Austin Dillon, $7,700 as a pricey tag for him starting 18th. I would say that's definitely not throw him out, but he's not quite pushed to the edge of Menard and Suarez, but I'm sliding him over that way. Boyer starting 19th. He is a short track racer. Wasn't incredibly fast in practice 3. 14th and 14th. Maybe he's a top 10 driver. At $8,200, though, he is interesting. AJ Allmendinger. He is a good short track racer, and he's a good flat track racer. And Phoenix is a flat track in half of the racetrack. The other half, it is not. And if you look through track history, it has not been that kind to... has not been that kind to AJ Allmendinger. Trevor Bayhn looks like a very bad play, but Trevor Bayhn's always one of those guys about three times a year. He's a bad play, and somehow, by the grace of God, he hangs on the lead lap and just things work out for him at the end. So it's always tough to just throw him out. Most of the time, you can just throw Trevor Bayhn out. The spider is getting closer. He's inching his way towards me. I've got my eyes on you, buddy. I've got my eyes on you, and you've got your eight eyes on me. Trevor Bayhn, never throw him out. Eric Armstrong starting 22nd, fourth on the short run, third on the long run in practice 30. Yeah, you're going to want some Eric Armstrong, especially at 8,100. I'm going to go ahead and throw him in my lineup. And remember, this is the first Phoenix race, but we all know that in the second Phoenix race, he almost wins at the second Phoenix race and qualifies for the championship, thus knocking out Kevin Harvick. But that did not quite come to pass. Started in the back, rode all the way to the front. Excellent job, Mr. Almirall. Kurt Busch starting 23rd at 8,600. I'm going to go ahead and throw him in the lineup. Doesn't show a lot of speed, but it's Kurt Busch. Chris Buescher starting 24th. Typical Buescher spot. Now you got Brad Keselowski starting 25th again. Just like the 13 spot, you get a driver in the 25 spot. Sometimes you think, uh-oh, this guy could have clearly got to 5th. This guy could have clearly got to 14th. Well, Brad Keselowski starting 25th just tells me that there was a mistake in qualifying. And I look at his practice speeds, 12 and 12 in practice 3. I want some Brad Keselowski. I cannot afford Brad Keselowski. I'm going to take out Kurt Busch to take Brad Keselowski. Ugh, that's not enough money to do that. But I'm going to go ahead and throw him in. We got Casey Kane starting 26th. Darrell Waltrip at 27th. Ty Dillon at 28th. Ricky Stenhouse Jr. at 29th. That's somewhere where you would consider playing Ricky Stenhouse Jr. You wouldn't love it. You look at track history for Ricky at Phoenix. And I'm pretty sure they did poorly in this race, if I remember correctly. But you look at 2017, he finished 8th in the fall race. He finished 4th in the spring race. Now, a little bit of that was due to race shenanigans of staying out late. I know for sure in the spring race, and I believe he might have done it again in the fall race. But he's a 15th place driver. I'm going to see what his average running position is. Stenhouse's average running position in those Phoenix races was 20th in the fall, 18th in the spring. So I was giving him a lot of credit. And he finished, man, he finished what, top 8th and 4th or 5th? His average running positions were 20th and 18th. Ugh, I would not feel comfortable with that one. And I would let, you probably would have been smart to let other people try to jam in Ricky Stenhouse. Sure, you'd want some, but I would definitely want to lower my exposure to Ricky Stenhouse Jr. and hope for some reason, whatever, that people decided that they're going to roster Ricky Stenhouse Jr. Michael, so we got DiBenedetto at 30th. McDowell 31st at 5,200. I probably would like that. I've got Corey LaJoy 4,700. DJ Kennington at 4,400. Ross Chastain at 4,600. And Jeffrey Earnhardt 4,500. Ross Chastain's probably the punt that I will go with here because he's in the very back, 36, and it's just a matter of attrition to stay alive. That gives me $5,500 if I double punt. And that means I can take Michael McDowell. That is not a very good lineup. That is not the winning lineup, but that is a lineup to start out with. Harvick and Bush, clearly my hogs. Brad Keselowski is a place differential play. I might be overpaying. The question you might ask yourself is, if you're taking Keselowski, maybe you should try to get, going into it, not being completely certain on Harvick and Bush, then you would go in and say, well, maybe I should take a third hog. Maybe there's going to be a third guy, like a Mark Trick Jr. who's on the damn pole, or Kyle Larson who's starting second. But you got Brad Keselowski starting 25th. It's a very cashy play, I guess. Eric Almirola, again, a good cash play, 8,100. And then two punts. Not crazy about two punts, but at these racetracks, these short track racetracks, and I know, wait a second, is it a short track or a mini track? Well, one thing is for certain, they run a lot of laps at Phoenix. So if we're going to base it on lap-wise, then Phoenix is going to lean towards a Martinsville, towards a Phoenix, where laps are very important. And where there are a lot of laps, there's a lot of hog points. Now, that means you probably need three hogs. And we don't have a three-hog lineup. It's a bad idea what I am doing. But if for some reason two guys run away with it, yeah, I don't know. Place differential definitely takes a little bit of a backseat to hogs at this point. I would probably, this is going to do it for part one of this Phoenix race, but what we have to start out with may not be the best build. But my point is, because hogs are so important, or the elite drivers are so important, hogs mainly, the hog points definitely get a huge bump, and hog points don't come cheap. That means you've got to pay up for two or three hogs. I mean, you've got to play for two, that's two everywhere. But a lot of times you need three of them. And if you need three, you can't afford three elite hogs without double punting. Maybe you can get a punt and a low 6K driver if you're lucky. But a lot of times, at these short tracks, there are two reasons that I believe that punting is double punting. Double punting is preferable. And that is, one, there's a lot of laps, which means there's a lot of hog points, which means you have to get those. You have to pay up for those. So you gotta save money. Two, at these short tracks, there tends to be more carnage than an intermediate track. That's over the long scheme of NASCAR. And I know people saying, well, you know, we've seen a lot of wrecks at intermediate tracks lately. And I know, and that's true. And we could see a lot more when they put in this new restrictor plate package. But if we're looking at the history of NASCAR, we tend to see more bumping, wrecking, smashing, and hitting at these shorter tracks. Like Phoenix. Don't believe the first Phoenix race had much wrecks to it. But in the second race, where they changed the track around and they now start in the dog leg and people are diving down, we're seeing five wide cars. And for the most part, at the beginning of the fall 2018 Phoenix race, they kept it clean. They kept it together. But as we inch closer to the checkered flag, it hit the fan. It always hits the fan. You get the feeling, you know that there's no way they're going to be able to keep it clean. And that's what we're going to see this time, because this is the first spring race that we're going to get to see the mayhem of the reverse racetrack. It's almost like we're doing Mario Kart reverse mode, but that's what they've done here. And that means double punt. Those are my two big arguments for double punting at and short-ish track. You got to be able to pay up for these elite drivers. And like here, I've got Kyle Busch and Kevin Harvick and then Brad Keselowski. And then you could get the carnage where a guy starting at the end doesn't have to do anything but just turn laps and survive. All right, that'll do it for episode one. Remember to keep checking out. We'll go over the optimal lineup in the next one. I know I apologize for not doing a part two for the Las Vegas, but there wasn't a point because I completely remembered the race. You're like, well, you almost remembered the whole race for this one. So what was the point? Whatever. We're moving forward. We're moving forward, folks. The next part, we'll go over the optimal lineup and maybe build a couple more lineups as well for the Phoenix race to help out with the process and procedure to go through a second run, maybe eliminate, find a smaller pool of drivers. Check out DFSmith.com in the future, FantasyNASCarPodcast.blogspot.com. But the spreadsheet will be out. Yeah, we've got a couple of months, obviously, before Daytona gets kicked off and getting that advanced lap data. Make sure that you're subscribing to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio. You can tell your Alexa to play it as long as you've enabled the TuneIn app, which doesn't take, you get the Alexa app, put TuneIn on there, and you can have it play. More rants coming, some YouTube stuff coming in the future. Still got a long way. It's still December. It's still 2018, folks. It's not even 2019 yet. Trying to get enough content. There's two things that I want to create. I want it to have an evergreen feel as much as possible where you can listen to any of these whenever you want. The rants should be good whenever. You don't have to watch them on a weekly basis. That was one of the things I didn't like about recording the podcast in the past was that you had a window, and after that window closed, no one was listening to that podcast that you worked on ever again. Ever again. You write the podcast, you record the podcast, you feel like you did a good job, and then when the window closes, no one's listening to it ever again. And that's why I rushed the thing out earlier in the week. I felt like, man, why does he release that podcast early in the week? He doesn't even have all the statistics. There's no even a point to even listen to it. He doesn't even watch practice. The reason I did it early in the week is so that people had Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday to listen to it. If I waited till like Saturday night to do the podcast, so all of your work week and your drive to work and your drive home from work and any of those times are not possible if you listen to the podcast. Saturday, not possible if you listen to the podcast. I understand the value of recording a weekly podcast after all of the history or after all the practices and the qualifying has gone down. That makes sense. It's basically like doing a show, which again, the show thing is the small one, you know. I don't know. I guess I'm not completely opposed to shows. But I'm opposed to putting so much work into stuff. There's nothing wrong with shows. We did a bunch of them. We did them at basically every site. We've done the show thing. And people have liked the show thing. I still, you know, if they ever released Blab IM again, if there was another Blab format where we could just jump into the chat, four screens, boom, and talk it out, I would not be appalled. But I don't want to set up Skypes and set up Zooms and set up Google Hangouts, and then use OBS and go through all of this work to put together a show with graphics. If they ever had a thing where I could just jump into Blab with a bunch of other people, we just randomly talk and people chat, I would do that again. Not every single week, but I would be down for doing that. But I don't want any more technical work. What was I talking about? The podcast, you can listen to it anytime. You can flip through them, check them out. Even this thing about Phoenix is just a strategy build idea. So you can listen to it anytime before now in Phoenix. You can listen to it anytime before now in the second Phoenix race. Thanks for joining me, guys. Appreciate it.